and I would like to welcome everyone here. I think I've been looking forward to this discussion that we're going to have today, because I think what we're going to be talking about today and discussing and analyzing is the way in which we need to move. We're going to need to step out of our comfort zones. We're going to have to step a little bit out of the box, and we are going to have to look at reforming and redesigning a lot of the systems that we have. And I think everyone knows that the current budget system that we're in this permanent fiscal crisis, as some will call it, isn't going to get any better anytime soon. And so the revenues are not going to be there in the future, and we simply cannot just continue to cut and hurt services. So neither one of the current suspects of solutions, which are increasing taxes and cutting dollars, neither one are going to get us to where we have to go in the future. And so what we have to look at on the revenue side is, how do we grow the economy? How do we create jobs? And yet that will only get us so far into the future. And so on the other side of the ledger, what we need to do is redesign and reform and look at how we can do things and change the how of the systems that are out there. How can we make sure that we have better results, better outcomes, better quality at a better price? And if we can do that, I think as a state, then we can work within a framework of a budget and still maintain those types of services and priorities that we value here in the state of Minnesota. And so a number of things have been happening just on the legislative side. Yesterday, the House and Senate Redesign Committee met. A caucus met, Democrats and Republicans alike. And the idea of that effort is to change the conversation, elevate the conversation on talking about redesign and reform, start to create a culture down here where we start looking at legislation differently in those terms. And also, maybe on the more short term also, is to look at an inventory of what we have out there. We have a lot of people right now working on redesign efforts, and they're all over the place. They might be out in local government committee or health and human services or taxes or education. One of the ideas is bringing all these ideas together and seeing where we can work together and have a more focused and productive approach. So that's starting to happen. But today, we've got a group here that started redesign a few years ago, very earnestly. And in fact, came out, and we're talking about the Association of Minnesota Counties, and came out with Minnesota Redesign, Governance, Transparency, and Flexibility, which has been out for a few years. They've been working very diligently on this, leading a lot of the redesign efforts in the local government area. And this has been out, like I said, for a couple years, and yesterday, they unveiled a proposal renewing the commitment to Minnesota. They came up with 10 items that potentially could save $1 billion over a biennium, $1 billion over a biennium. So we're very pleased to have here the executive director of the AMC, Jim Mulder, who has been really spearheading this effort in going with local government redesign. We have the president of the AMC, and someone that especially Representative Lanning and I are very familiar with, because he, Mr. John Everett, who is a Clay County Commissioner, where we represent, and also I know Commissioner Wilson was here, but I don't see him right now. So they have about a 30 to 35 minute. I've asked them to throw out these ideas. Now, we're not voting on any of these today. So it's to get us to think about what is possible out there and what might redesign look like. So I'd like them to proceed. If you really have a question, they've said they'll take questions, but otherwise maybe we could wait and then come back to some. And then I'll also leave time for testimony when we go through with that. So with that, Mr. Mulder and Commissioner Everett, thank you so much for being here, and please proceed.
Thank you, Paul. Chairman Marquardt and members of the committee, we're grateful that you invited us to come to this today. We certainly would like to present our ideas, and that's all they are at this point, is ideas for discussion. And we look forward to hearing your response, and even more to hoping that our ideas will generate more ideas about what things could be done. As you said earlier, Chairman Marquardt, in 2008, Minnesota's 87 counties dedicated themselves to making government more transparent, flexible, and efficient through the effort called Minnesota Redesign. And it was based on the following principles. First principle, the state of Minnesota and its 87 counties face tremendous challenges that require real reform over the usual temporary fixes. Current economic climate has required counties to make some hard decisions about services. State mandates on county government have created a system that is unnecessarily cumbersome. And the one-size-fits-all solutions from the capital have led county services to become unsustainable. Second principle, Minnesota counties are already finding better ways to provide many services. Counties want to streamline government services, reduce waste and inefficiencies. State mandates on spending and service delivery impede the ability of Minnesota's 87 counties to be flexible and provide more effective and efficient services locally. Flexibility, transparency, and efficiency spark innovative ways to provide services best for the local needs. Third principle, Minnesota Redesign has always focused on achieving better results. The best government programs focus on results, not solely on money spent, with flexibility on how the service is delivered. County governments could provide more efficient, effective services with better results if the state partnered with the counties. Innovative service delivery can improve the return on public investment. Counties are encouraged that the legislature has taken notice of our redesign efforts by creating their own bipartisan caucus focused on issues we've brought forward for the past few years. That's why we're taking this opportunity to submit our ideas to you today for real reform that could save the state significant dollars and improve efficiency. Jim Mulder, our executive director, will now go through the 10 points that we have initially come up with. And may I remind you that there are many, many other ideas that that have come, even after we've just listed these 10 among our own members, ideas have come forward of many other things that we could add to this list. So,
yeah. Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Mulder. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of Minnesota Counties. There's an old Chinese saying, and some people say that it is a curse, which goes, may you live in interesting times. I'm hoping it's not the curse, because we certainly are living in interesting times as counties, as the state, and as the federal government. We've moving forward with these proposals, ideas, concepts, within the sense that we need to rethink in what we call PACT. First, we need to have a new kind of partnership between the state and counties, the counties and other counties, cities and counties, townships, all of us who hold the responsibility and the trust of citizens to carry out services as best we can. We have to hold ourselves accountable. Our systems today too often do not hold each of us accountable. We have county commissioners being asked to spend money, be held accountable for that spending, but yet have no say in whether that's what we should be spending the money on. Maintenance of efforts, cost shares, mandates are all in that list of things. Our systems today don't encourage creativity. What happens in our systems today, if you are a creative entity out there and you find a way to save a couple bucks and you say, you know, I'd really like to do this in a great way and we'll save a few dollars and then we're going to take that money and spend it someplace else, too often someone from someplace says, well, if you're not spending it on that program, we're going to take that money back. So what's the incentive for doing it better? Finally, it's the issue of transparency. And you can go through almost every single proposal and program in this state and try to explain to a citizen how the heck does it work. Now certainly with my background, I understand the property tax system a little, but I would challenge any citizen to explain exactly why their property tax is what it is and what exactly is it paying for. We need to do a better job. Our current system is not broken. And now I say that, and you're going to say, well, then what the heck are you here for? It is not broken because we actually do local government better than almost any place in the country. Our problem is that it is not sustainable. We do not have the resources, we do not have the ability to meet the new challenges that we are facing on a daily basis. If you look at, and I talked a little bit about this yesterday, our base of services was built, our resources were built on the belief that we had in the 1960s that the base was always going to grow. The economy would grow, we'd have more workers, we would have more resources, and then as the economy would grow, we'd keep putting more and more things on top of that base, if you think about it as a pyramid. Well, in the last 3 years, and it was really predicted by Brandel and Weber back in 1995, is that the base has actually shrunk, but we keep piling things on top of the pyramid. At some point, the weight of everything that we are piling on will destroy the base and will not allow the base to continue to do all the things we need to do. When we give these proposals, we are not suggesting that we are going to do more with less. We are going to do less with less, but we hope that through these proposals we can do it better. We are hoping, and we believe that there are going to be moments in time that we have to set aside perfection for the good. In some of our rulemaking processes and some of the things that we do, we are aiming at perfection, but the cost of perfection and the cost of being able to carry out every single mandate is getting in the way of doing good. We have social workers who spend 40% to 45% of their time filling out reports that are sent somewhere into the system. Those are really nice things to do. I think a lot of us would say, can't we get some bigger piece of their time to spend with actually the people we deliver services to? I also want to say that these proposals are not, in many cases, legislatively ready to go into the hopper and be passed tomorrow. They are the first steps that we believe has to be part of the conversation. Some of them are going to be long journeys. And I suspect you'll go, what the heck are you guys talking about when we suggest some of these? Some of them we think are very short journeys that could be completed this year. And let me begin with our first proposal. Our first proposal is to reduce the size of the state highway patrol by 50% and redesign the patrol to provide really three services that are desperately needed at the local level. First is accident reconstruction services, particularly across most of the state, and maybe not as true here in the metro area, but we don't have the capacity to reconstruct accidents, and they are experts at it, and we need to continue that service. The second thing that we don't have, and if you go to a lot of counties, they see a murder once every 3 to 5 years, or it's not the most common thing in the world. We need experts who are expert detectives and investigators, and we think that it would be a wonderful way to change the mission of the patrol to provide that expertise on those major kinds of crimes, whether it be drug crimes, whether it be violent crimes, and work cooperatively with the local police entities to make it happen. The third thing is certainly we would want to have them keep their rate standards responsibility. We understand that, and you're going to hear people who will say, well, gee, we can't do that. There's going to be 100 reasons why you shouldn't do this. But we also believe that there are creative ways that by redeploying the services of the people that are out there, that we can provide the kinds of coverages that the citizen wants. I drive back to my hometown quite often, and every once in a while, as I'm driving back, you'll pass the highway patrol car, and all of a sudden, a few minutes later, you'll pass the county sheriff on the same road. Are they coordinating that service? Are they really, on a daily basis, knowing who's doing what and how you're doing it and what are you doing? Or how many cars show up when you need a car? If I need a policeman, I don't care what color that car is. I only want the policeman. I don't care who sent them to me. I just want somebody to send them. We have 130 PSAPs in the state, approximately. The technology and a great innovation that's out there, Candy High County is now dispatching for Big Stone County. For some of you from rural Minnesota, you need to remember that Swift County sits in between them. Big Stone and Candy High do not touch each other. It has saved over $60,000 for Big Stone County. They pay Candy High County to do it, and Candy High County didn't have to hire another person to carry out the service because they had to be geared up for that anyway. Those are the kind of creative things that we think that this first proposal will lead to. Our second proposal is a proposal to take over the state the responsibility for state highway maintenance and snow removal for the state roads. This is a big idea. This is one of those ideas that has a long journey in which there would be so many issues that would need to be resolved, but we think it's the kind of idea that people need to talk about. Could we get efficiencies? Can we get efficiencies? We believe you could. You would get a different vision of how to deliver services. Instead of having three entities of cities, counties, and the state driving the snowplows out there I'll stay on my road, and then sometimes the counties use the state road to get their road, maybe we could coordinate that function. Maybe it would require a different idea than putting them all together, but we believe that's one of those kinds of areas that's a big idea that somebody needs to be talking about, whether it's both at the county level and here at the state legislature. The third proposal is kind of the issue of resources. We have been faced as county governments, and I think the city folks would tell you the same thing, the death by 1,000 cuts. We have, and I think, and I've told others today, that it is insulting for the governor to be making and reducing county program aid to $57 million next year, and then not standing up and saying, what are the things you don't want the counties to do? I think that's disrespectful of local government officials and those who are providing these services. I will say the same thing about legislators if they are going to do the same thing and reduce our county program aid and then not tell us what are the things you don't want us to do. We are not going to be able to, we cannot continue to do more with less. We've laid off approximately 10% of the workforce in county government over the last 2 years. There isn't that much left that we can cut. So we are recommending that let's simplify this process. Let's make a greater transparency in the process. Let's create a system where we're not going to come here and ask you anymore for more program aid and ask that you got to do all these things. Give us that authority. We'll do a half-cent sales tax, allow counties to opt out. We will carve some piece off the top, similar in the same kind of philosophically that there would need to be some sort of disparity program out there to deal with some counties that have almost no retail sales. But we will come back with, I believe, a program. It saves the state, theoretically, in the budgeting process, about $600 million is what our recommendation is. And we would raise approximately $640 million. But we believe that in our current system, when you pass on cuts to us, fundamentally what happens is we are left with two choices. We either raise property taxes or we have to cut spending. Well, we think counties should have a third choice. They should have this new revenue source, and now their choice will be, I can lower property taxes, or I can lower spending, or I can pay for spending. Give locals the choice, and the citizens will have a much better understanding about it. Now, I will also say is that people say, well, the sales tax is regressive. Of course it is, but it's not as regressive as the property tax. We have used the property tax about as much as we possibly can within this system. Now, I would probably recommend that we have a wholesale look at all of our tax systems, but I'm not sure that we're quite ready to go there yet. But I do think that this will help spur that discussion also. Our fourth idea is really a system that we came up with an idea and started this program literally 20 years ago, which is the Community Corrections Program. 32 counties are in it. Those 32 counties provide services for about 73% of the population. This program has been a successful collaboration between the state and counties in providing services. The state does give some grant money to the counties, The counties put in their own money, and then they provide the services that are really geared at the local level about how to provide probation services, how to deal with community corrections, etc. Unfortunately, we have two other programs, and we've never been able to get the consensus to move the other programs there. Now, there are reasons that we know we have to worry about employees, and we know we have to work through whether it's attrition or how do you move people, and we want to protect everybody in this system. We're not out to say that we're just going to be, that we want to do the same thing of a slash and burden technique, but we believe that this is the kind of example where we had a good idea, and then it's basically stalled out in the process and never moved forward the way we believe that it could have. The fifth proposal is to really make major reforms or significant reforms in the court system. The most expensive and most important person in the system is the judge. Part of our problem in the court system is we're asking the judge to fill their calendar not just with the dealing with the people that we are really afraid of, but we also are asking them to deal with people that either we're mad at or some folks that we know we really don't care, but all of a sudden they're in there getting a name change, they're getting minor. There's a whole lot of things that we could do through administrative fines and other things that maybe the judge doesn't have to be part of. We also are inefficient in how we deal with it. We could use televideo conferencing so that if someone gets picked up for some crime and for instance, in one of our rural counties that doesn't have a jail, they get hauled to the county next door, we keep them overnight, and then we have to haul them back the next day, and then the judge says, yes, here's your court date, and they're released on their own recognizance. Rather than hauling them back and forth, maybe there's a different way of doing it. Maybe we could have reciprocity among the districts so that we didn't have to move them back and forth. That 15-minute hearing could be held in the other courtroom. We're not talking about the trials, but we have the technology. We have the technology so that if they need an expert witness from the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension out in Nobles County in Worthington, if we have a story about how this is supposedly a true story, I can't verify it, but I've been told it enough times, I'm going to believe it, is that somebody from the BCA needed to go out there for a trial as an expert witness. They went out the first day, it's about a 5-hour drive, they got out there, they stayed overnight, they got to the trial the next day, the trial got hung up in a bunch of motions, they had to stay over the next night, they got on the stand the next day, they talked for 15 minutes, and then they got to go home. We paid for 2.5, almost 3 days of time for 15 minutes at the trial. Maybe we could have hooked them up with a televideo conferencing system so that they could have spoken to them from here in St. Paul. They could have been doing their regular job whenever they needed them. Could it be done every single time? No, but there are certainly times that we could have done it. The sixth item is an item where this is a really creative solution that the counties, and this is a model that we think should be, that has the opportunity. And what we want to do is we have two pilot projects that are going around the issue of chemical dependency. Fundamentally, what these pilots do, and I'm not an expert here, but I'm going to try to explain it as best as I understand it, is it kind of moves away from the concept that we're going to cure everybody who is chemically dependent. Because what we are finding, what we have learned over our experience, is that sending somebody to the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th time through rehab, and they still aren't getting it, probably isn't the most, that isn't a real good success model. What we are going to do, and what these pilots are doing, is they're going to put people more in a case-managed proposal so that we can put people into a position where they're going to be, whether it's housing, whether it's diet, whether it's other issues, whether it's other medications, where we can manage their care so that they at some point are ready to go through some sort of rehabilitation program. We believe the success rate will be much greater. What's interesting about these programs is that we're putting our money on the line. If our counties don't do this within the grant that we get from the state, we will contribute more. We're going to pay the difference. What's really interesting is on the other side of the equation, if we can do it for less, which we really believe we can, we will have the resources to invest in other chemical dependency programs because we don't have enough resources now. What we're asking is to not have the other programs get started, but allow people to position themselves so that as soon as the data comes in, they will be in a position to move forward. It takes a year and a half to 2 years to put all of the things together to do one of these programs. And some of our counties are so confident in this program that they're willing to begin that process of moving towards that goal. Number seven is to adopt a state uniform statewide planning and zoning law. For years and years and years, we've had a state, we have a county planning and zoning law, and we have a city planning and zoning law. They are about 80% the same. But there are some little things, but they're the kinds of things that will keep cities and counties and towns from being able to coordinate their service as well as we possibly could. Our suggestion is to take the best from both, put that together, and then really go out there and challenge us as cities and as counties and as schools or as townships to make it work, make it better for the citizen. Find solutions that are driven by citizen needs within the land records departments and the land control departments, rather than continuing to keep our silos in every place that we look. Our eighth proposal and our ninth proposal are very much alike and goes back to the pyramid that I talked about earlier. We need, when you look at the turmoil we are going through, as we look at the fiscal situation that we are facing at the state level, and as we always like to say, when the state gets a cold, the local governments catch pneumonia. We need to cure it. We need to deal with our pneumonia. And more mandates, more rules, more maintenance of efforts, all of those things, at the same time where we're trying to redesign and reposition ourselves and redeploy our resources, you can't, it's very difficult to do both of those things at the same time. I'll give you an example. We are right now facing SSTS rules, subsurface sewage treatment rules. They're great, but they are about perfection. We have been making great strides in protecting the environment. Are we perfect? Absolutely not. But we've been making great strides. One of my counties, one of the counties I work for, has estimated it would cost them an additional $150,000 estimated over the course of a year to be able to carry out, and this is a small county, to carry out the rules, the new rules the way they're written. A lot of it is about getting information to the state and putting in consumer protections, and we're going to have all of these challenges and we're going to go see things once or twice. And so we are suggesting maybe we can put these on hold. I think there was a question, Mr. Chairman. Was there a question?
I think we'll let you finish this 10 and then we'll...
So whether it's the mandates or rules, we need applause. We're not asking for the... In some of these cases, we're not going to ask for the repeal. Some of them we should. But we really need to pause and say, you know, give them some latitude to make some hard decisions. We still, as county officials, will still answer to the public. We still want to be accountable. We still will be very transparent in what we're doing. But we just can't keep on this path that we are on. Finally, Proposal 10, in some ways, it sounds in many ways the simplest, but in some ways it is the most, it's the biggest of the issues that we need to move forward. It's the issue of allowing counties home rule charters. Currently, counties are what we call in Minnesota, or what is called in this country, Dillon Rule counties. We can only do those things that you as a legislature, as the state, tells us that we can do. For instance, a county is not allowed to adopt a burning ban in their county, because the legislature has never given us general police powers to enforce or to initiate a burning ban. It can only be done by the Department of Natural Resources. That's just that's a small example. But at the same time, if a county seriously wanted to do what a different structural model that might create a police district among three counties, or might create a partnership of pairing and sharing the way the schools used to talk it, or other kinds of structures or organizations or other ways to do business, we have to come here and put it in a bill, and then you have to approve it. We think, we believe that self-organization is the most important thing that we can do today. We are in a system, since for a long, long time, that's been, and it's mechanical.
And it's the best way that I can, is that there's this great big gear that has socket or sprockets on it, and it turns, and then we're kind of linked into you, and you make us turn. We can't continue that kind of system. We believe it's more of a fluid dynamic system, where it's, if you ever think about fluid dynamics and you pour water on the ground and the water will start moving where it needs to go. And we think that we need to allow citizens, we need to allow the local governments, we need to, the cities and counties in the communities, to be making great bigger decisions and more important decisions about what's best for their community. Yes, you as a legislature need to give us the performance standards. You need to say you need to live up to this, or whatever that standard is. But then, let us take off the shackles. Let us figure it out. I think that will create the innovation and creativity that we need in the state. It will allow us to be sustainable, and it will allow for the next generation of citizens to really, really enjoy all of the qualities that Minnesota, the state of Minnesota, provides. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Mulder, Commissioner Everett, thank you for the insight and the courage to bring these ideas forward. Representative Detmer.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have one question on point number three, if I heard you correct. In terms of program aid, you mentioned that you would like the legislature to tell you which programs to cut. That's the way I understood it. I know we're limited amount of money that's being put into program aids, but I know, could you just clarify that? I believe in local control and reducing the mandates that we have on local governments, but could you clarify that?
Mr. Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. I hope I didn't give the impression that I want the legislature to tell us what to cut. What I want to do is that if the legislature is going to cut our aid, I would like the legislature to have a conversation about which of the mandates and which of the services are not priorities to you that would allow us to make the decision to cut them. Because if we're not given relief from those mandates and those things, we are left with very few things in which we can say that this is the priority for our county. And that's why I think the current system is so broken, is because we are asked to take some really hard decisions, but in a county budget, we estimate that between 60% and 75% of what we do is by mandate. So that leaves a very small piece of the budget where we can find those solutions that are going to meet. So we need a bigger discussion. You need to participate with us and say, maybe these are some areas that we think that we can lift, whether it be some of the mandates, whether it's some of the environmental responsibility. Maybe it's a service you say, I guess we can't do that one anymore, period. We're going to make the cuts, but the choice that we have is that the issue of the raised property taxes are to cut. So I apologize if I'm not really asking the legislature how to cut every local government's budget.
Thank you.
Representative Lanning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, let me commend and thank AMC for taking this initiative. We're very proud of John Everett, our county commissioner, who is in the lead on that. And Mr. Mulder, as I've told you before, you're on the leading cusp here of what is needed in government today, and I really commend you for your work and thank you for that. I have a couple of observations or questions. Number one, I would like to see a number 11. As you know, both Commissioner Everett and Mr. Mulder, that one of my big issues has to do with the way we manage water in this state. And we could be a whole lot more efficient and I think save some money and make sure we have our limited resources put to the best use if we had some redesign there. But we'll save that discussion for later, since this committee is not an environmental committee. But with respect to point 10, a question I have for you is, if we did this, if counties had the home rule, how do you keep counties from stepping on cities' toes? with counties deciding to do things that cities in that county have, to this point, had an opportunity to do. How do you keep that from happening?
Mr. Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm going to have John answer, actually, the first part about water, because I think he'll be interested in what we have started. And then I'll answer your second question, John.
Commissioner Everett.
Yes, we've been meeting with the number of water groups, the Soil and Water Boards, Bowser, and water, the Watershed Association and AMC have been meeting together. We've had two meetings now this winter to discuss the very issues you're talking about and how we can proceed to make things more efficient. As you know, right now, if you have a water issue, you could have 7-8 different agencies coming to try to tell you how to do it, and they all think they're the boss. And it's virtually impossible for counties to know which way to go based on the information they get from these agencies. So we're working on that, too. That easily could be an 11th for us.
Good. Mr. Mulder.
On the issue of home rule charter, under home rule charters, the counties are not given extraordinary powers to basically take over services from a city. They could, only in a case where there's an absence of the delivery of a service, could a county service be imposed. And what we would tell people is that that's not how you want to work it. The cities are function under their own state law. Some of them are under charters. Some of them are under statutory authority. So a home rule charter does not give you the power to supersede a city. What it would do is allow counties and the citizens in the county to participate and hopefully look at what are the opportunities where cities and counties and towns can be more collaborative and cooperative. I know some of the suggestions people have made of sharing engineering departments between cities and counties. Right now, counties have great engineering departments, but some of our engineers spend less than a third of their time actually doing engineering. They're doing all of the other stuff. So we think that there are just a lot of opportunities, and we think by creating the charter, it will move the discussion about how best to meet community, in which a community is defined not just by county, but it's a community defined by all of the players. And it's not governed, communities today are not governed by geography. They're governed by what is your interest. In some cases, there is the world community. So I do appreciate the concern, but I think it would be a part of how do the cities and counties work together.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that kind of gets into the next question I had with what kind of vision you have for redesigning your connections and cooperation with cities. And are you saying, in effect, that having the Home Rule Charter may enable you to figure out what services are best served by the county versus what might be best handled by the city? Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lanning, that really is that this is the way our current system is set up in a very reactive way, is that people will bring proposals, cities, counties, whomever, will bring proposals to the legislature. The legislature will react, or they'll initiate, and then we react. What we are hoping for, that this is more of a grassroots kind of, these are the ways, this is some opportunities that it might work, because what we have learned in our redesign in the last number of years is how you might respond and design the right system that works up in your community, in Moorhead, because of how you work with Cass County and Fargo. That solution might not be exactly the same solution that you would use down in Houston County or La Crescent or some of the places down there. We are learning more and more, I think, within the areas of public administration that each of us are going to have the right model. And for us to try to just kind of do a stamp and how they did it in the 1850s when we created counties in the southern part of our state is, how far did your horse ride within one day? Is that you didn't want to be out overnight, so you had to go to and from the courthouse in one day. Whole different model today, and we need people out there to in those counties and in those communities to have that discussion and really talk about what's the best way and who is in the best position to provide which services. In some cases, I don't think it is the county, and I know it's not the county, but in other cases, it may be that there's a more collaborative effort in delivering a service.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One last question. I'm sure that some people would have expected one more other item on this list, and that has to do with the possible consolidation of counties. Instead of 87, that maybe the model would be something less than that. Or you would have counties that are small counties, their neighbors in an area might be moving more towards having one of various things instead of two, three, four. Could you comment on where you folks are at with regard to that issue? I realize this is a very sensitive issue with your members, but I'd like to know what your thinking is.
Commissioner Ebert.
Yes, certainly we think that there's all kinds of possibilities. I mean, I think that cities and counties need to be talking about how to do things together more. Counties need to be working on how to do things together. It may be that we don't eliminate courthouses or eliminate counties per se, but if we can find ways that counties, adjacent counties, can do more work together, which they already are doing in so many ways, I mean, that can really be a beneficial thing for service delivery and efficiency. And there may be, after we've worked together in many, many ways, we'll determine at some point in time, I don't know when, maybe 10 years, 20 years from now, counties will decide that, hey, we don't need both courthouses. Maybe when one courthouse gets to be needing repair or replacement, that they'll decide, well, we could do better by merging with someone else. That's a possibility. We're not suggesting that. We don't know how that would be, but it has to be a local decision. It's not something that we think can be imposed on by the state or anybody else. It has to be neighboring counties deciding that it's time to do that sort of thing. And eventually, some of those decisions will be made, we think.
In the, Mr. Chair, Representative, the current system is a light switch system of how you would eliminate counties. You basically, you turn on the light or turn off the light. There's a process that you have to go through, elections and all this kind of stuff. And it doesn't encourage a real discussion in the community about what are the other options. You're either going to be a county or not a county. We think that by going to home rule charter, you'll be able to adopt some of the same kinds of ideas that the pairing and sharing and some of the school systems use, where maybe the first step is let's share X service, let's share Y service, but ultimately, who knows what the opportunities might present themselves as the communities start to trust each other more, start to work with each other more. I don't even want to predict what that might be, but I know there's a lot of creative people out there, and I know that there's a lot of county commissioners who are recognizing that the current model for them is getting very difficult. I use the Travers County story a lot, is that on average, they've only been averaging...
Mr. Mulder, be careful. Travers County...
And Travers County, in a very positive way, has been averaging only 10 to 15 births per year in the county. Well, what is the focus of that county? Probably is they care about children, but what they really care about are more elderly people, because if you look at the average age of the county, it's in the 50s. So how they might want to create a structure, or who they might pair and share with, or who they might collaborate with might be different than some other county that has a huge population of young people. So what we need, and again, it's the unshackling of all of the process mandates that we place on everybody, and kind of take those off and give us the performance mandate. I'm not going to argue with about performance mandates. I think that's the appropriate role of the legislature. But it's the process mandates that drive us crazy. Mm-hmm. And that's what we need to really focus on.
This
has been a great discussion. Representative Lanning, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I want to say thank you and commend you very much. And keep up the good work. And Mr. Mulder, I'm very sorry to hear that you are leaving your position. I understand that was just announced. And I sure hope that your successor has the same kind of vision and drive that you've had on this issue.
Well, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I didn't know that we were going to announce that here today. That's okay. It did go out in an email to all of our members, and I was faced with the dilemma of my own personal dilemma. I've been in a doctoral program for the last 3 years at Hamline. I've reached that moment in the program where I'm going to be asked to do my final exam and then write a dissertation. and I made the conclusion that I could not do justice to both this job and the kind of performance that I expect from myself in my doctoral program. And the opportunity has been presented, and my wife and I have gone to through a lot of conversation to, I really want to focus on being the best doctoral end result that I can possibly have, and I appreciate your comment. I am passionate about county government. I am passionate about government in Minnesota. I suspect that you'll continue to hear from me on occasion, because my friends would tell you I am seldom at a loss to or a willingness to opine on all of these kinds of things. I wanted to use a couple big words to make it look like it's in the doctoral program.
And Mr. Mulder, we all share Representative Lanning's comments and really congratulate you for bringing this issue forward on the redesign, because it is difficult, takes a lot of courage to kind of move people along into, you know, how can you move them into where they need to go before they see where they need to go, and that's kind of the tough thing to do, and you're doing that with these.
Mr. Programs. Chairman, thank you very much. I will continue, I guarantee you, I will continue to prod counties and cities and the legislature, because I am absolutely convinced that unless we are willing to rethink and redesign the path that we are on, that we are facing failure. If we allow this debate to become a debate about whether we raise money or cut services, we will fail. Mm-hmm. Until we have the debate about what services we're going to give, what are the outcomes that we demand of the citizens, what is the vision we have for Minnesota, if that debate is not happening, I will be very disappointed in all of us. And as a state, we'll lose out to the places that do. Currently, we are, as a state, I think, having these discussions even more than any place else and talking to people across the country. But we have barely started. We have to change a culture about how do we think about things.
Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question isn't about any of the specifics. It's about the process. When I looked at these 10 points that you brought forward, I could not help but think, what kind of process did you use to get 87 counties to agree to these 10 points?
We didn't. it really wasn't about, Mr. Chairman, Representative, to be very candid, this is a diversion from how we have done things in the past. We had a board of directors and a steering committee and another committee make a decision that we were moving down the same path that we have always moved down. We were ending up in a discussion about the math. We decided as an organization and from the leadership of the organization that somebody needed to be bold and challenge and put a stake in the ground that we have to do it differently. We have to think about everything that we do. And we strategically picked a bunch of places that we knew would create great angst. If you would see my emails in the last couple days, I've got county officials that are very unhappy. And what I tell them is, for this is the first step. And they say, well, we can't afford this, we can't afford that. And I say, but it's the first step. It's the step of trying to decide. And some of these will never happen. I know that. Some of these we will never get over all of the hurdles. But some of them have a tremendous opportunity to make a difference in our discussion, our debate, and ultimately, how do we deliver services? And if we avoid the discussion, if we avoid talking about the big stuff, we're never going to solve the challenges with just the little stuff. We've been here year after year after year, and I can say this because I'm retiring, I suppose, with the list of mandates. We come in and say, get rid of mandates, and immediately somebody says, well, give me the list you want to get rid of. We give you the list, and we get rid of one, we get rid of two, and then on the other hand, two or three are added. And that's that philosophy, that mechanical response of action and reaction will never solve our problem until we decide that what we really are focusing on, what we really need to do is, what is the vision we have for our state? What do we truly want our counties to do?
and then say, counties, you better do it, or otherwise somebody else will, or we'll get new county commissioners to do it. Until we are serious about doing that, until we are serious about taking on those issues, we will fail, and we will continue to do the same things that, and unfortunately, we've been doing for the last number of years. And we will all be disenfranchised in that decision-making process. As someone who has lobbied in this place, when you get to the last 2 weeks, we feel totally disenfranchised by what happens here. Mm-hmm. All of the work that we have done over the previous 3 or 4 months are for naught. Because all of the arguments that we have made, all of the suggestions we might make, they're kind of set aside. And I feel for all of you who are doing these jobs, this is why I think I'm going to go to an academic route so I can just talk about it. I don't actually have to have responsibility to do it. But I think that there's an opportunity. I think we can't pass up this opportunity. There's never been a better opportunity. If you were to ask me which of these should we absolutely do, I would say you absolutely have to do number 10, you absolutely do number 8 and 9, and then you need to start working on the other ones.
Very good. Commissioner Everett, here's my plan is, I think there's some people I'd like to comment from the audience, and I'd like you both to stick around, if you would, to come back at the very end. But Commissioner Everett, have you got anything to add to the...
Mr. Chairman and Representative Dietrich, you ask a very good question. Obviously, we didn't have time in this process to go to every single county and get the county's buy-in. But our board of directors met last week and made this decision to go forward with this bold move. Some of our commissioners are not happy with it. Others think it's the best thing we've ever done, that we're taking a bold move. So we're going to get criticism, and I think we're going to get some applause in the process as well. But our whole purpose is to lay things on the table that need discussion. And none of these things are we ready to say this is the way it should be done. We're saying we need to talk about this. We need to figure out if there's a better way to do government than what we're doing currently in Minnesota. And so I think once everybody understands that we're not, you know, these aren't proposals necessarily to be enacted immediately. These are proposals that need discussion. And they will lead to, as already today we've seen, they lead to other ideas, bold ideas that need to be discussed. And that's really our purpose.
And I think that's a great point to be made, is that in this political environment, both sides always have the loyal opposition. So if you try to step out of the box, and you know, you can take some hits. But I think one thing this does is that when you start focusing on outcomes and results and accountability, you move away from the things that tend to create the partisan rancor, and that is the money, the inputs on things. So if someone comes before this committee and I ask them, you know, how is this going to improve the quality of life in cities, that changes the debate versus whatever they have on the other end. And that's what we really should be focusing on. And I do think that this might be the savior to moving us from very partisan rhetoric into focusing on what really matters to people, and that's how we're serving them in quality services and results and outcomes. And just, again, just applaud your efforts on this. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for sharing an intriguing proposal. I'm glad you recognize it's a long journey, because change doesn't always happen as fast as anyone wants, and some of these things have some impacts that need to be looked at without a doubt. What I'd be interested in is, a couple of times, Mr. Mulder, you've mentioned the accountability and the focus on that, and the chairman has just talked about, you know, sort of the focus on outcomes, and I think, you know, part of getting the freedom that you're asking for here in terms of no new state regulations and those sorts of things is, you know, building that trust between state agencies and counties and or cities, or, I mean, this could apply to schools as well, the same kind of issue. And I challenge you to keep working on that. How do we build that accountability in? So no matter where you live in the state of Minnesota, if you run into a particular circumstance, you can expect about the same sort of respect and treatment and options. But doing it without a lot of micromanagement and a lot of paperwork going back and forth. And because that, you know, I totally support that when we have so many unmet needs that county commissioners know more than anyone else, then it's really hard to justify so much money being put into reports that nobody reads, that but stacked up, and that sort of thing. And I know people will raise issues about jobs, and are jobs going to be lost in this consolidation? I personally tend to believe we have so many unmet needs that if we're smart, we'll use the resources that are freed up, not just to solve a budget hole, but instead to offer hope to the people who are on the end of a waiting list or who aren't even being able to have their needs thought about.
Mr. Reverend Loeffler, thank you. I have two comments about that. A lot of what we've done in this state over the last 40 years is make an assumption that every delivery system and every place that we deliver services, that we are going to screw it up. And we're going to make every possible rule and regulation that make sure we don't screw up. In some ways, we'd be better off if we would make the assumption that here are the goals you need to make, and we're going to assume you're going to meet those goals, but when you don't. So we've spent so much time in almost a police function that we've lost the ability for be creative. The second issue I think is equally important is how do we best get the performance standards that we need? The unmet needs, I hope not a single job would be lost. I will guarantee you that if we don't, we're going to lose jobs because of the proposals that we're going to have to deal with this year. You can't take another $1.2 billion out of the system. And I know you're going to have to do that. You can't not take some amount from counties and expect us all of the jobs are going to stay. It ain't going to happen. We're not going to levy back. We showed this year that our local county officials have decided that they can't push the property tax even close to what we could have this year because of the tough decisions. And so I believe this is the. In these proposals, we have the best opportunity to save jobs and to stretch our resources to keep people employed as county employees and as state employees.
Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mulder, and again, we will definitely miss you. I think we all got that email, and you didn't know we all saw it.
I think I did know that, I guess.
Just looking at the price tag, that's what I'm always interested in, and the savings, which is great. I note that you've got number three is probably the biggest price tag on the list, and I think that's modeled off Representative Marquardt's bill. Is that correct, roughly?
Similar. It has some of the similar aspects of Representative Marquardt.
Okay. Can you just tell me, I noticed that in the small little italics down there, this has not been vetted by a committee. Can you just, and it's hard to be candid, I understand that, but can you tell us kind of how did AMC as a group react in total to the Marquardt Vision Bill on the county option sales tax? And kind of where are they now and where do you see this going? I see you have a disparity pool set up. You're doing it a little different. But just kind of, bigger picture, not details. How do you think that's going as counties are reviewing these trade-offs on more stable taxes and less dependence on the state, that kind of stuff?
Mr. Mulder.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lincheski, last year when Representative Marquardt came over to our association and pitched his proposal to us, our legislative steering committee at the time said we weren't ready to endorse it. We didn't oppose it, but we felt like, man, this thing is, there were a lot of confusion and people were not comfortable. When it says it wasn't vetted by our committee, it means it didn't go through our committee process. There's four of them that didn't go through our normal committee process but a lot of it came from the anecdotal part of our counties that when we look at it, now this is going to maybe sound, how could it be any worse than what we're doing? We have counties that passed budgets a month ago, 6 weeks ago. And now we're going to get another $165 million of cuts to that budget by what the governor's proposal is you get it in almost every other proposal. We not only get cut in county program aid, but we're going to get cut in all the social services programs and all of the environmental programs and all the health programs. Go across the board, we're going to get cut in those programs. And there are a lot of county officials say, how could this get worse? There will still be counties that I've had counties, and one of the one of the things is, thank goodness we have Mr. Hines and Ms. Dalton to do computer runs, because that's what they want me to show them. Show me a computer run of what happens here, and I just say, I don't know. We will have to figure that out, but if you start with the idea that this is possible, we have a chance to get there. But if we start out as that, well, I'm not going to support anything until I find out what the computer run says, you'll never get there. You will never, ever get there, because all of the reasons to not do it will overwhelm all the reasons to do it.
Thank you so much.
At this time, if anyone would, and we'll come back to you for final words. So anyone at this time would like to comment on what you've heard or suggestions, or you've got a great redesign idea of your own? Commissioner, come forward.
And Paul Wilson, Olmsted County Commissioner, good afternoon. And first of all, I want to extend an invitation to all of you to attend the Rochester Day of the Capitol down at the Armory this afternoon, or as you're meeting our colleagues from Olmsted County and Rochester. Greetings. I would just like to share something with you, two comments. Everything that Jim had just talked about. Yesterday, after we went through the process, the public process of releasing all of this, I drove back to my home county. We had a county board meeting yesterday. And at the conclusion of the county board meeting, our administrator informed us that we would be looking at another $4 million cut for this budget under what's going on. I look back over the last 7 years in Olmsted County of the dollars that the tax levy has had to pick up on mandated issues that were inappropriately funded, whether federal or state, and we are talking about $105 million. It's time that we need to take a look at how we do things. Everything that has been presented, I think, will be helpful as we look at the future. All of us want what's best for our communities. The issues of looking at the home charter, I think, are very helpful in respect to, we can bring the citizens in and have that discussion. Yesterday, I do a monthly radio program, and I actually jumped ahead of and I asked Jim if I could do this, use this information before we had the public process. And I had individuals call in and say, finally, there's something out there where people are thinking. So I just leave that with you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? All right. Anything from members here? If you would come forward again, Mr. Mulder and Commissioner Everett. And, you know, I think you brought up, and you were talking about employees. And that tends to get brought up quite a bit when we talk about redesign. And some people think redesign is adding more taxes to things and changing things. And that's not redesign, because it's not doesn't mean you're improving services at a better cost. And some will say redesign is just cutting things. Well, it's not that either, because you don't improve services just by cutting things. And so what we're looking at is, how can you innovate and look at ways in which not only are you getting a better price, but you're trying to create a better service. It's a tough thing to do, but it can be done on many fronts. And, you know, I think it's important to note that any redesign effort, because you're always, it's a self-improving system. That's what you have to do in counties and states and so forth, is going to depend on the employees. And if you know, you have to create those incentives to change the system. And it's not the employees that are in fault. It's a system that you have to change. And if you're successfully going to do that, you have to motivate and be able to create incentives for employees to innovate. And so you can never ask an employee to innovate themselves out of a job. So we can see where that's never going to work. So you know, when we kind of talk about those things, you know, Indianapolis, the city of Indianapolis, which there is a Republican mayor there, Stephen Goldsmith, and this is talked about in Vanishing Bureaucracy. And he contracted out a lot of private. You know, he said when he looked at local governments that it wasn't whether or not the service was a public service being provided or it was being provided by the private as far as efficiencies and savings. He said it was competition that really improved the service and drove, you know, made the cost more efficient. But even with that, he had several ways. He basically had a no layoff policy for public employees for the same reasons that I just mentioned. And you can do so many different things. I mean, you can move people into other jobs, or you can go through attrition, but it was never a thought of having people innovate themselves out of a job. So I think it's real clear when we talk about redesign that people tend to think, well, you're cutting jobs. And in fact, you need the employees to do that. And in Pennsylvania, this is positive outcomes by Ted Gabler, but in Pennsylvania, they had a huge program of turning the state around and becoming more productive. And the person who ran that was the lieutenant governor under Governor Ridge, but he said employee involvement is the bedrock of successful change in ongoing innovation efforts. So it's just how, now, it may be in a different form or a different structure, but that's, you know, kind of how you have to move that forward. And so comments to that, because I know we hear a lot about that, and I know at the press conference that we held when we had redesign, questions came up on, you know, and it's too simplistic of a view, because in fact it's going to be the employees, so that's going to change the system ultimately, but you've got to create the framework to allow them to do that. Comments on that?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've had the opportunity for the last number of years to work with county commissioners and talk to county commissioners if they've had to go through the process of laying off people. In a lot of cases, in a lot of our smaller counties, these are not just some abstract idea that this is somebody that they don't know. These are people are related to people. They know them. They see them on the street. These are sometimes even family members. So the last thing in the world I think any of us would propose is that what we are doing is a light switch kind of system where on one day we're going to turn off the switch and all these folks are going to be laid off. We recognize that in this, if we set a vision today on some of these proposals, and if we understand that that's the place we want to be 2 or 3 or 4 years from now, there are ways that we can adjust the system, we can cushion the system, we can find ways, whether through techniques within the system, that can reduce that impact to as minimally as you can. But I will tell you, we're going to lay off employees anyway. They're going to be laid off this year. I've talked to commissioners. It's going to be a couple deputies here. It's going to be a few people there. It's going to be environmental services officers. It's going to be a social worker. We're going to lay off people because of where we are today. Counties will not levy back everything. It doesn't matter whether you pass the levy limit, you can only levy back half or not. I mean, I'd sure hate to have you not do it, because maybe some choices will be choices to do it, but it doesn't matter. The levy limits are these guys. The men and women who are county commissioners, they're the ones who have levy limits, because they're the ones who understand at their home community how much their community is going to be willing to spend for these services. Yeah. The other thing that redesign is that I did not talk about, but it comes from the transparency of redesign, is increasing the value equation for the citizen. Part of the reason that citizens maybe aren't valuing what we do very well, we need to do a better job. If we're more transparent, if we are more efficient, if we provide services better, they may recognize more value from what we do and then, in fact, be willing to support higher taxes or spending more because of the value we get in return. Part of what we talk at the county commissioners a lot is about leadership. And leadership is about going into your community and standing up and explaining what the value equation is for your community. It is not a cost-benefit analysis. It is the value about the kind of community that you live in and the kind of services that you provide. And until we get that focus, as long as I guarantee as long as we keep the focus on my tax bill, I don't know a single person in the world that if you ask them, do you want higher taxes, that they'll say yes. But if you can combine that with, this is the value you're going to get from those taxes, they may say, you know, if that helps my quality of life and that helps mom in the nursing home, or if that, I'm optimistic about the people of this state that they are willing to say that we need more taxes.
Thank you. Commissioner Everett, any closing comments? This has just been a wonderful discussion today, and I just appreciate you bringing this forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We just are very happy that you were willing to hear from us today, and that we hope we can continue this discussion. As far as your talk about jobs and so on, I think that the redesign by itself is not going to eliminate jobs. In many cases, it might move from one thing to another, But I don't think by itself redesign means elimination of jobs. I think it means that we will do things better, more efficiently. We'll find, there's, like you say, there's all kinds of things that are not met, all kinds of needs that need to be taken care of. And if we can simply find ways to do things now more efficiently, we'll find other things that we know what need to be done that we could use those resources for. So we thank you very much for your time, and hope we can continue the discussion.
Thank you very much for your efforts. And I want to leave members with an analogy that Ted Coldery made in where talking about how you have to look at things in the term of the consumer or the citizen rather than the producer. And he uses Mozart. Now, how would you make a piece of Mozart music better? Some might say you should play it twice as fast, increase taxes. And someone might say you could make it more efficient by cutting out the second violin. Well, none of those things would make Mozart sound better. But when they invented the CD, think about the consumer. The consumer now doesn't have to buy a ticket, can in the privacy of their own home over wine and cheese, well, I'm getting a little, can listen to Mozart. And so the experience for the consumer is much better than any of those other alternatives, and that would be redesigned in some way, shape, or form. So with that, do we have a motion to approve the minutes on February 17th?
So moved.
Representative Scott, any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Members, thank you so much. We're adjourned.